Hi, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We were up late last night because there was a fantastic game in the NBA, which we'll discuss shortly. Other things happening on the docket. The Giants fell yet again in primetime. The Cowboys made a big trade. But now let us start with the NBA. LeBron James trying to get his first win as a Laker. This was a wild one against the Spurs. Fast forward to the end of the fourth. LeBron finds Kyle Kuzma in the corner to cut the Spurs lead to 3. One of his 14 assists in this one. Next possession, LeBron James hits the 3 from way out to tie the game at 128. We go to overtime, less than 13 seconds left. Lakers up 1, 142-141. LeBron at the line, misses the first one. LeBron at the line, misses the second one. LeBron James finished with 32-8-14. All right, Spurs have a chance to take the lead, and they do when Patty Mills hits the jumper. LeBron would get one more shot to win. Goes up, and he can't get it to go. Spurs go on to win 143-142 in overtime. The Los Angeles Lakers fall to 0-3 on the young season. Here is LeBron after the game.
It's been a really long time since you've started a season 0-3.
Yeah, since my rookie year.
Do you, is it? Okay. It answers
yeah,
that question.
Yeah, I know.
How tough is it?
No, it's not tough. I know what I got myself into. It's a process. Mm-hmm. I get it. And we'll be fine, so. You know, I didn't come here thinking we were going to be, you know, blazing storms, you know, right out the gate. It's a process, and I understand that. So, you know, the game is, you know, frustrating not to get the win, but I've showered, and I'm good now.
LeBron said it. He knows exactly what he got himself into. We talked about it all offseason. Nick, what was the key to the Lakers losing this one?
Well, LeBron's going to get killed for missing those two free throws late, and it's justifiable. Since the beginning of last year, he's been awful in these late free throw situations, been the worst player in the league who's shot at least 10 of these clutch potential free throws in the last year, so he's going to get killed for that. But they lost this game a number of times. They were fortunate to be in overtime. The first half, LeBron was really bad. Kuzma kept them in the game. In the second half, while LeBron's offense got going, the Lakers' defense was non-existent. I tweeted with a minute left, I'm going to bed. Lakers 0-3. I thought they were down 8 with a minute left. I thought the game was over. They were very fortunate to be able to get it to overtime. And then in overtime, after the Spurs blew it at the end of regulation, the Lakers blew it in overtime. That LeBron had an and one to go up 6 with a minute left in overtime. You can't blow a 6-point lead in overtime. And LeBron's free throws had something to do with that. A bad final play had something to do with that. Right now, this Lakers team is not defending anyone. It was not helpful yesterday that Ingram and Rondo were suspended. We talked about the fight yesterday. We didn't talk much about the repercussions, meaning you're going to be without, theoretically, your second-best shooter and one of your two best point guards. And so the Lakers right now are a team that, who are they really? Like, they're a team without an identity. They're not playing good defense. And LeBron saved them at the end of regulation and then blew it at the end of overtime.
Well, he definitely blew it at the end. Let's just be honest about that. You brought up a good point. LeBron hasn't been good in the last year and plus in closing out games, shooting free throws. But also, the effect as far as missing free throws, because LeBron doesn't have history with these young players. So I believe there's a domino effect, all right, that he still needs to develop. We saw the shot, him hitting the shot in practice. Like, these guys have, Kevin Love and them seen it. Like, Kyrie and them, those guys seen it. So they kind of got used to it. JR, they got used to it. And the effect that it has on your teammates. LeBron hadn't done that with his young core. So for me, I believe this will affect him because it affected, he missed the free throws, and then it affected how he attacked the last basket. They're down by 1 point. You got to go to the hole. The old LeBron would go to the hole, make the right play. Either he's going to try to finish and do an and one, which he's going to get to the line. They're only down by 1 point. There is no need to shoot a diagonal 3-pointer. The effect of him missing the free throws affects the team because it affected him how he was going to close this out. He would typically go to the hole, find an open shooter, dish the ball to them, but it didn't. He still wanted to win the game because he knew he had missed the free throws, and he wanted to take the game into his hand.
Didn't he? Because he didn't trust. trust his teammates or didn't because
No. I think C's saying because he didn't want to get fouled.
Yeah, he didn't trust himself to go back to the free throw line.
Because he was 8 of 9 at the line going into the last 12 seconds.
Yes.
After the Lakers got up by 6 and then thought they could just play the clock. The Spurs go down and get a 2-point basket, so now it's a 4-point game. The Lakers' next possession, they were not trying to score. If they scored, it would have been a bonus. They were just trying to use the entire 24-second shot clock. They did. But then they gave up a top-of-the-key three, and they still felt fine. LeBron got the ball in the inbounds with 12 seconds left and never looked to pass to anybody. He wasn't looking in Cleveland, he'd look for Korver, which would make sense. Korver's 90% for his career. He was clearly going to say, you guys have to foul me. I'm not giving the ball up. I'm going to go to the line.
Well, when you look at him and Lonzo Ball, those are the two prominent ball handlers.
Sure, but Josh Hart's out there. Josh,
I understand, but as far as handling the basketball, you would think it would be Ball or LeBron holding the ball. And we know
Lonzo's not a good free throw shooter in any circumstances.
Yes.
But LeBron did the right thing there. He has to be the one to shoot those free throws. And this has not been a trend throughout his career. Throughout his career, up until last year, his clutch free throw numbers were about identical to his regular free throw numbers, which is mediocre. Like, this is the one part of LeBron's game, just general free throw shooting, that he's never been an A-plus in. Every other part of the game, defense, scoring, three-point, there's at least been a part of his career he was an A-plus. He's always been an average free throw shooter. Something odd over the last year where he's become a bad clutch free throw shooter. At the same time, he's had the more clutch regular baskets than at any other point in his career. Mm-hmm. The three at the end of regulation, what we saw in the playoffs.
He shoots the ball better than at any point in his career.
And so it doesn't make sense. But those are, listen, nobody can make excuses for it. He asked for the ball. His team has a lead. He didn't miss one free throw, which would have been bad. He missed both. And because of that, the door's open for the Spurs. Patty Mills hits a big jump shot, and then they lose.
Because of that, also because of something you touched on, which is team defense, which they're having a hard time with. This is a team, though, that played 3 games to start the season pretty competitively against 3 very good teams, the Warriors, the Blazers, and the Spurs, all playoff teams from last year, and can't close it out. Would you point to their defense as the one thing they really need to fix at this early point of the season?
And Rockets, Blazers, and Spurs.
And Rockets, Blazers,
Spurs, not Warriors. Yeah, the defense, go ahead, C.
The defense has to be addressed. And also, if you're trying to play at a pace, you might score 115, 120, but you do have to play defense. Now, they said the way the roster was constructed, it was based on playing defense. But the Lakers do not have good individual defenders. LeBron is not a great individual defender. Look at the starting lineup. Young players, they're not good individual defenders. JaVale McGee as an individual defender, no. Help defender, LeBron, yes, excellent. JaVale McGee, help, excellent. So they have to be able to stop guys. Just like late, San Antonio, you can't give up an open three the way they give up that late in the game to San Antonio.
And they got eaten alive by LaMarcus Aldridge. Like, you put in Zubats. He got 5 fouls in 4 minutes. He was just every time. Once Zubats went in the game late third quarter because JaVale was in foul trouble, LaMarcus, with that pump fake, got JaVale in foul trouble. They then go to Zubats because they have no other big men. Like, that is a giant hole in this Lakers roster, is backup center. They needed LeBron essentially to be the backup center. But this was another people, I don't know how many people noticed it. LeBron, before he hit the three at the end of regulation, called timeout. They didn't have one. Like, they were down 3 with 8 seconds left. LeBron signals for a timeout. They didn't have one. The refs either didn't notice or let it go. That's a technical foul. Like, LeBron has not been, I know, listen, on the year he's averaging 27, 8, and 8. Why? Because he's LeBron. He'll always find a way to average that. But he hasn't been as sharp as you would expect, even with a new team, even with everything swirling around him. To forget that they didn't have a timeout, that's an error that he simply does not make.
This is not too much different than when the first time when he left Cleveland and went to Miami. He was still trying to find himself around Dwayne Wade and his Miami Heat. Now, at that time, he was younger. He could get up and down, far more athletic and a better defender. I just also see in these 3 games, Jenna, we talked about over the last couple years, and especially last year, the hold that LeBron, the power he had over the Eastern Conference, that no matter Boston, if he was playing them, they knew LeBron would make a shot. Toronto, they knew no matter what. Milwaukee, all these teams, because they've lost to LeBron over and over again. In watching these first 3 games, Jenna, I don't see that in the West. I don't see no fear in Portland. I didn't see fear in Houston. San Antonio, this game late, Lakers leading. I didn't see the LeBron hold that he had over the Eastern Conference. Now that he's playing in the West, top to bottom, which is better than the Eastern Conference, it's just going to be very intriguing to be able to watch it and see how it plays out.
Do you think that comes with time?
When you haven't lost to LeBron as much as the guys in the East have compared to the guys in the West, the guys haven't been beaten.
None of these guys in the West have had their season ended by LeBron. Because that's the only people who have that are still together are the Warriors, and they then ended LeBron's next two seasons, so it's different. Now, DeMar DeRozan, who's now on the Spurs, if they had lost this game, he might never play against LeBron again. He watched LeBron beat his head in Toronto, and if they had blown this game as well, he might have just quit playing LeBron. But right. Spurs got the win.
We
got
to take a break. Coming up, talk some football. Did the Cowboys pay way too much for Amari Cooper, or just too much? That's next on First Things First. We will get to the Cowboys trade in a second, but first, more from this game. Lakers-Spurs, crazy play in the fourth. Josh Hart hustles to save the ball. The wild throw down the court. Lonzo Ball saves it. Watch it. LeBron then scores.
No, this should have won it. This is a minute in overtime. This is to put him up six. Like, that should have been, it's an and one. That should have been the ball game right there. And the way LeBron reacted, he thought that was the ball game right there. Had a minute more to play. They didn't make another good play.
More NBA Mavs Bulls. Luka Doncic dazzles us with an old school pistol Pete ball fake and drops the dime to DeAndre Jordan.
Okay. I wish he would have shot that though.
Luka. Trae Young goes 35-11 the other night. Luka's had a couple good games. DeAndre Ayton last night was a big time player. The three leading candidates for rookie of the year going into the year have had a good opening week. How about Luka? Luka led him in scoring in a win the other day, too.
Finally, a little Monday Night Football. We'll talk about this in a sec. Odell Beckham Jr. with the toe drag for the touchdown, see?
Yeah, they need a little more of this. Late in the game, the score was not necessarily the indicator of how this game was going. But late, they should have thrown in the ball early.
Eli ran two of the most asinine quarterback sneaks leading to this play. To leave him 5 seconds for the onside kick and the field goal. But Odell came through in that spot. Odell could have had three touchdowns last night. Eli missed him once, didn't go to him a second time, and then finally hit him there.
All right, moving on. The Cowboys wanted a receiver for Dak Prescott and were apparently willing to give up just about anything to get one. They traded a first-round pick to acquire Amari Cooper from the Raiders. Cooper made the Pro Bowl his first two seasons in the NFL. Has struggled in the year and a half since, though. But he could be the number one option for Prescott. As for the Raiders, they now have three first-round picks in next year's draft. Nick, you surprised the Cowboys gave up a first-rounder for Cooper?
Listen, I'm shocked at the price they paid. Are the Cowboys today closer to their goal of winning the division than they were yesterday? Yes. Did they get better at their biggest position of weakness? Yes. But did they pay not just sticker price, but way over sticker price? Absolutely. I mean, we heard that the Eagles were offering a second rounder. The Eagles believe they're going to win the division. The Eagles believe they're going to be that second rounder is going to be in the late 50s. That seemed to be the market rate. And the Cowboys offer what could be the 9th or 10th pick of the draft. I thought just for the opportunity to then pay Amari Cooper $14 million next year and to potentially have to extend him. So I thought the price they paid was exorbitant, and that's without even commenting on Cooper the player. Now, see, you've known Cooper the player for a decade. I mean, he's 24 years old. You've known him for 8 years.
Yeah. So how much is it going to cost you besides money to be able to get a top-flight receiver? And watching the NFL draft, the draft is not a dependable way to get yourself a number one guy. So if you're saying, I want a number one receiver, the number one way to do it is be able to get a guy who's a number one in pro football right now. Now, you might have to pay a little bit more, but I disagree with you as far as the price being exorbitant. Because if you look at this offseason, didn't Oakland trade a third-round pick for a wide receiver?
For Martavis Bryant.
And they weren't expecting him to be a number one, right?
No.
Was he a number two or three?
I think they thought he was going to be a number two. He wasn't, but that's what they traded for him to be.
Right, but in Pittsburgh, he was a number three.
Yes. He was their speed guy. Yes.
They traded a third-round pick for him. So now we're saying Amari for a first-round pick, like, is a guy who is consistent, doesn't have any blemishes, character-wise, off the field. Like, you know he's a hard worker. So, no, I don't believe the asking price is too high. And I've been following the draft. I see these guys coming to the league. In the last several years, man, guys are hard to find the number one guy in the draft. So, for me, do I trust the talent, especially in a young player in Amari Cooper, 24 years old, turns 25 in June. If you look at Calvin Ridley, the Alabama wide receiver, the next great wide receiver, he's 23 right now, going to turn 24. Amari's only 6 months older than him. Amari's been to two Pro Bowls. And if you look at the last several years, the wide receivers drafted, DJ Moore in Carolina, we don't know. In 2017, Corey Davis in Tennessee at number 5 pick. Amari Cooper's significantly better than him. The jury is still out on him. John Ross, the number 9 pick in Cincinnati. Man, he's been a bust thus far. So when you talk about looking at the draft and trying to get a number one wide receiver, if Dallas needs a number one wide receiver, you're better off trading for him right now. And let me tell you this, if Philadelphia is going to get him and I got to play against him twice for the next 4 or 5 years, I need to throw a little extra in the pot. So I believe that the market value was a high second round pick. But when you look at, I need a guy now. Also, I don't want to play against him twice and going to Philadelphia to give to Carson Wentz. So, for me, it was worth a first-round pick because I can't evaluate my quarterback and Dak Prescott moving forward unless I give him a number one target, and they don't have one on the roster.
What about the Dallas fans who are wondering where Amari Cooper's been the last year and a half?
Well, that's what, this is something, and that's why I wanted to pull on your experience with the player, is what has happened to him. His story was one that made sense, and you can elaborate on what his story was up until 14 months ago. And up until 14 months ago, he was a guy who was a blue-chip prospect, made 2 straight Pro Bowls as a blue-chip prospect, and then disappeared. So, like, how do we make sense of what's happened to him over the last 20 games?
Well, look at the organization. How do they support your star players? One of the other players, Khalil Mack, you see how they supported him. Jack Del Rio, Amari was on the upward trend, but also his arc is the same as their quarterback. So it's not as if their offense has been playing spectacular. You know, ever since Carr started going down, then your numbers as a wide receiver started going down. Crabtree's numbers went down. That's why he's in Baltimore now. So it's hard to be. Look at OBJ. When Eli's numbers start going down, it affects the wide receivers. So Amari, a couple minor injuries, the offense struggled. Carr's he's not ascending. So he is a product of that environment in Oakland. They got rid of the coach. They brought in John Gruden. Obviously, John Gruden thought there was a future there for Amari Cooper when he took over. Now, something changed along the way.
Do you have concerns then with him matching up with Dak Prescott, who he himself has not been great this season? But it's chicken and egg. It could be because
I don't have a concern about Amari. Amari is the type of wide receiver that you want. And the reason why the Cowboys, he's more useful there is because you can get him the ball a lot of different ways. He's got speed, and you can run him on a reverse. He's unbelievable off the bump and run. So if you try to press him a lot with putting all those people in the box, which they do for Zeke, then he's going to be able to take apart the defense. Quick slants, and he is a deep threat that you don't have to allow to run 25 yards down the field and protect the quarterback because he can get deep either slanting through the defense. He's a great route runner. He's a consummate pro. He's everything you would love, Jenna. He is not a diva wide receiver. He does not need extra maintenance. You don't need to reaffirm him every day. Like, I believe that the Cowboys are going to be very, very happy to get Amari Cooper part of their football program.
Listen, I think Amari Cooper is a good player, a better player than he showed over the last year and a half. And a lot of that is from talking with Chris and learning about his story and from just seeing at Alabama his junior year. At Alabama, when they had no passing attack, even by Alabama standards, his junior year there, they had a bad quarterback. He had 1,700 yards and 16 touchdowns.
With Blake Sims.
With Blake Sims as his quarterback. So you know the talent's there. He hasn't suffered some major injury. My concern for the Cowboys is we have seen this story before where they think they are a receiver away. I watched him in 2000 think they were real close and give up 2 first-round picks for Joey Galloway. I then watched them learn from that lesson so much in 2009. They gave up a first, a third, and a sixth for Roy Williams. And now they give up a first for Amari Cooper, who even if he gets back to being the Pro Bowl guy he was, I don't know how much that moves the needle for the Cowboys.
Well, listen, if you want a top receiver, you have to pay something for him. You're not getting them for free, and obviously you're not just getting them through the draft. I like the Cowboys. I like what they did. Adding Amari Cooper gives them the real opportunity to be able to evaluate their quarterback. You cannot evaluate your quarterback, Dak Prescott, unless you give him a number one wide receiver, and you're not. What are you going to do? Wait. Let's just throw this year away. Let's wait till the 2019 draft.
Well, Absolutely not. Listen, that is a key part of this, which is one of the reasons I'm so skeptical of this, is the money that he instantly demands as a $14 million contract next year as opposed to a first-round draft pick receiver. But C's point that you have to make a much more important financial decision about whether or not you're giving your quarterback $20 million per year plus moving forward.
And this is how you do it.
Well, this is, it's going to give you a better chance to fairly evaluate the quarterback. That part I agree with you on.
All right, Cowboys now have Amari Cooper for the last 9 games of the regular season. Let's see what they can do with him. Time now for your MLB player resume sponsored by Indeed, the world's number one job site. Chris Sale had a great season with a 2.11 ERA and striking out 237. Batters. Sale has dealt with a stomach illness during the playoffs, but is scheduled to start Game 1 of the World Series for the Red Sox tonight. Nick Wright, how good has Sale been this year?
Listen, if he hadn't spent a couple of stints on the DL, he's probably your AL Cy Young winner. With a team that won 108 games and him being the clear-cut ace and a 2-1-1 ERA, this is a guy who's had a great career, and this is the best season of his career. Now, remember, last year had a shaky playoff run with Boston, his first playoff run with Boston. So to see him, or a couple years ago, see his ability to bounce back this season, see if he can do it against Kershaw tonight.
It's so good to hear you say good things about Boston.
Oh my God.
That's great.
I respect their individual players. It's their fans I don't like seeing. I know you don't want me
to take a break. Coming up, Eli Manning struggles again on Monday night, as do the Giants. That's next on Versus Hurts. Cardinals cornerback Patrick Peterson has reportedly asked to be traded before next week's deadline, but Cardinals head coach Steve Wilks said he's not trading him. CC, should the Cardinals move on from Peterson?
Ooh, it's hard to move on from a great player.
And, player.
Steve Wilks, the coach there, like he's a defensive coach. Why would you let go of a guy that can guard half the field? And I know Patrick Peterson, it seems like he's been playing 20 years, and the kid only 28 years old. Yeah. You know, so he's still got a lot of good football left in him. I like his demands, though. I like the teams he would like to go to. Philadelphia, potentially, going back where he played college football with the Saints. I believe Arizona should move on from him. They're in a total rebuild.
Oh, so listen.
Yes.
I totally disagree with you on that part of it. For his sake, I wouldn't mind if they did it. But I have a general philosophy in sports. You never get better by trading Hall of Fame track players who are still in their prime. Like, and that is like, I'm not saying, I'm not putting him in the Hall of Fame yet, but if he continues
on this.
He's
a Hall of Fame player.
He's a Hall of Fame track player. He's still in the prime of his career. You're not going to get fair.
They're
going to
lose a lot of games the next 2 or 3 years.
They'll lose more without him.
Yeah, that ain't my problem.
Okay, what?
That's Steve Keim, the general manager.
Finally,
Let him work that out.
Blake Bortles won his starting job back, so that took about 5 minutes. He'll be the starter as the Jags face the Eagles in London on Sunday. However, he will reportedly be on a short leash. CC, did the Jags make the right move going back to Bortles?
They didn't have no choice. Short leash? Like, short? Like, it's Blake Bortles, man. You've been investing in him. You can't decide to go nowhere else. You think he's going to get benched by Cody Kessler? Now, Cody Kessler, he ain't played good football like since high school. Matt Castle. That Matt Castle, he sent the message to me, too. He didn't like that name that I called him a high school quarterback back when I was doing another show. He
Matt Castle didn't like me neither, so don't worry.
Yeah, no problem. So I told his buddy he's definitely going to have that nickname as long as because that's the last time somebody has some confidence in him.
Eat that, Matt Castle.
Cody Kessler, not good in college. At USC, not good for the Browns. Like, no, he's not the guy going to take Blake Bortles. And all that ruckus they had in the locker room, you think the locker room is enthused about Cody Kessler starting a game in London? No, they much rather lose a game with Blake Bortles. At least they know exactly what they got. This is a decision that Jacksonville made. I knew this was going to happen. They couldn't have Bortles on the bench, all right? And, man, the only fans that love him is over there in London. You got to bring him back for London, all right? He plays well in London. Look at his track record.
Right.
His stat sheet says that he plays better in London. The Jazz got a lot of fans in London. Like, you got to keep him in there.
You are, if I can use one of my favorite phrases, and I know it's not a word, man, you are unexpectable. I did not expect you to play the he plays well in London card, but I can't argue with that. He is London's quarterback. He is London's favorite son. That's where he plays best football. Outside of the fact that they're playing in London, I would have given Cody Kessler a chance. Here's why. I don't think we can, in 2018, use almost any quarterback's previous track record about who they've been without seeing them in this year's NFL. Without seeing them in this year's NFL, where you can't hit the quarterback, where you can't touch the wide receivers, where everyone's throwing for 300 yards.
You still have to be able to play, and you still have to be able to throw. So you think these guys who couldn't play, now that you can't contempt, you think we're going to have more quarterbacks capable of playing?
What I think is that Cody Kessler, when he got his real chance to play as a rookie 2 years ago on a terrible Browns team, we didn't really get to see if he could play. I think it's probably a 1 in 30 shot he can play, but I think it's a 0% chance this guy can play.
No, you can't say it's a zero shot because Jacksonville has won games with him. Like, he's proven that they have a certain style. They have an offensive philosophy. So what do they do when they put Cody Kessler in there? Do we just change the philosophy? We're just going to try to power people over? We have one of the best offensive lines. We know as far as our running back has been inconsistent. So we're trading for Carlos Hyde. Carlos Hyde is going to be toting the ball for them. So what are they going to do, just change their offense, go three wide
now? No. I'm not advocating that, but I would want to see, and it's tough to, and listen, it's tough to sit here on television and advocate for Cody Kessler. It's really advocating against Blake Bortles. I would want to see, when there's discord in the locker room, can I put someone in at quarterback that just won't turn it over? Blake has 7 turnovers in the last 3 games. Their 3-game losing streak, turned the ball over 7 times. Is it ridiculous to say, the head coach said, we're gonna have a competition. He lied when he said that. He said everyone's competing at every spot. Well, they didn't have no practice between when he said that and when he announced Blake is the starter. I don't know that you can credibly look your guys in the locker room in the eye and say going with Blake Bortles is our best option.
That's all they've been saying. That's all Jalen said in the GQ article. That's all they say in their interview. Listen to the sound bites. That's all they've been saying is, oh, man, Blake Bortles our guy. They all been drinking the Kool-Aid. So they all been lying. They know it, but at least they know what they do have in Blake Bortles. He took them to the AFC Championship. They had the lead at halftime. They were 30 minutes away from the Super Bowl. Cody Kessler, oh, they can't win double-digit wins with him. Like, there's no way. Like, maybe his high school team. Last time he was really a good player. All right? Go back to high school.
Poor Matt. Cody Kessler's getting some of the spill off from Matt.
We just did a segment on who's better, Blake Bortles or Cody Kessler.
Listen, that's the situation Jacksonville put themselves in.
Yeah.
Because why?
I gave him good advice yesterday.
Yeah, because
all right?
Why?
So now, let's go on. Matter of fact, we've been talking about him too long. Okay. Blake's going to do well in London, man. They love him over there. They might keep him.
This guy. Might not come back. Might be Cody. Monday Night Football last night. Big stage for Odell and the Giants and Matt Ryan and the Falcons. Slow start for both teams, but second quarter, Falcons open up the scoring with a 47-yard strike to Marvin Hall. Third quarter, fourth and goal. Eli Manning pressured all night. Can't find anyone. Pat Shurmur, very much not pleased at all. I'm very much not pleased.
He's saying throw the ball to Odell.
Fourth quarter, Tevin Coleman puts the game away with a 30-yard run. Falcons hold on to win this one 23-20. Giants now 1-6 on the year. Matt Ryan kicks off our postgame sound.
For us to get the job done tonight, to kind of inch our way closer to 500 is a positive for us. So it was a tough win. Took, all 3 phases all night. But I'm proud of the effort across the board. And that showed up, for 60 minutes.
With the way we've worked and the players we have, and obviously disappointed. And but that's what happened in this league. If you don't play to the caliber that you can. And we're not doing that.
All right, we'll talk about the Giants side of it in a second. But first, Chris, did the Falcons save their season with a win last night?
And they still got a lot of injuries. I mean, the Falcons have played some good offensive football, but, I mean, their defense, historically, it's hard to play when you've lost the number of starters that they lost from week number one, losing multiple starters, and then a couple weeks after that, losing other guys. Like, it's been tough for Dan Quinn and the Falcons. Their offense has been explosive, and last night's game just enough to be able to get the win. So even some offensive injuries. Freeman's been out, hadn't been in the lineup. So, I mean, this Atlanta team, are they back in it? It's tough. They're in the toughest division. It's not an easy out with Tampa. All right, you don't want to play them. Jameis is back at the controls for them. New Orleans might be one of the better teams, second best team in the NFC. And Cam Newton, man, that's no picnic anytime you play Carolina. So, no, they need a few more of these and to be able to win games like this before we can include them in the playoff conversation.
Listen, it might be foolish of me, and I do it every year anyway, to before the year look at the schedule and say who's got a tough road, who doesn't. But halfway through the year, we got a pretty good idea of who's good and who's not. And right, Atlanta has four road games left against teams with winning records. At Washington, at New Orleans, at Green Bay, at Carolina. You already got four losses. You have four road games where you will be a significant underdog. So even if they sweep every other game they play, what do you got to do go in those four games? 3-1? Like, when you already have four losses, when you start the year 1-4, here's the path to the playoffs. Go 10-1 the rest of the way. So are they still alive to go 10-1? Technically, yes. But the reason teams that start 1-4 typically don't make the playoffs isn't because they're mathematically eliminated. It's because they're not very good. That's why they're 1-4. And like the Atlanta, I don't blame them for this, by the way. Every year we have a team whose season gets ruined due to injuries. And Atlanta, in its first two games of the year, lost arguably three of its four most important defensive players mm-hmm. due to injury. And when you already had a limited defense, it's hard to overcome that. It's a good win today, or yesterday, pardon me. It was a good win last week. But you got to reel off like 6 of 7 to be in the hunt again.
On the other side, the Giants, while 1-6, afterwards Odell said, it doesn't feel like we're 1-6. We're playing better than 1-6. I mean, it doesn't matter. They're still 1-6. CeCe, what went so wrong for Eli Manning and the Giants yesterday?
Well, I don't know what it feels like to be 1-6, so I could see why.
This guy.
I don't feel like 1-6. What did it feel like? You know what that is? It's a wide receiver who had a good game, so people can't point the finger at him. I played good. I ain't concerned about the rest of them because the truth of the matter is we're 1-6. Now, I don't even know, Nick, in the history of the New York football Giants, how many times they've been 1-6, but this is not a good football team. Their quarterback's not good. The Giants are rebuilding without a rebuilding plan.
Correct.
They stuck with the quarterback who got them a couple Super Bowls. Now, I like Eli, and I've given Eli a lot of slack and everything, but look at the press conference between Matt Ryan, who won the game, and Eli Manning, who lost the game. One looked like a leader, and Matty Ice was mic'd up during the game, got some nice sound bites. His tight end jumped off sides. Man, he chewed off right into his butt. Let Hooper know, man, you can't make that kind of mistake. We're trying to run out the clock to win the game, so it was great insight. Eli has thrived when he had other great leaders around him, Michael Strahan and others. Eli is not that type of Type A personality that's going to take over and galvanize a team. When you have people like Michael Strahan, he has thrived. Him and Odell have not thrived together. All right? So we're stuck with Eli because he won those two Super Bowls. But, man, it's over. The Giants are rebuilding.
Man, and I understand that there's a lot of people that know Eli, know his family, and they, out of respect to what he's done and out of respect to the human being he is, is he a Walter Payton Man of the Year winner?
Yes,
I feel
absolutely.
Like he's got a patch
yeah,
on his
jersey.
Yeah,
there's only a few.
Right, there's only, and so for all
Larry
those.
Larry Fitzgerald.
Right.
And no one doubts that. He's a
right,
great
no,
guy.
No. But because of that, I mean, I watched the game last night. Listen, Eli Manning's got a great gig right now. Nobody in the history of professional football has ever made more money, and evidently, all the broadcast crews nationwide have an agreement. We will not criticize the quarterback. We can see on the sideline the head coach say, throw it to Odell. And we saw, right, I mean, Odell's open. And, of course, I mean, he tries to fit it into his tight end, I think his backup tight end, in double coverage. And Shurmur on the sideline, throw it to Odell, is what he's yelling there. And Shurmur and Odell multiple times throughout the game,
talked on the sideline. Odell kept his composure, and you're right, he did have a good game. I thought his comments after the game were benign. Like, you know, I think he's just trying to say nothing that'll get him in trouble, that'll create headlines. But the problem for the Giants right now is what it has been all year. They have an awful offensive line and a quarterback who can't play anymore. And maybe in an ideal situation he could. Maybe if they had traded him to Jacksonville and he played in warm weather behind a good offensive line where they only wanted to make a couple plays a game, he could have a different arc this year, but that's not the situation.
So we are 7 games in. You can't jump ahead to the draft. What do you do now the rest of the season? Do you keep playing Eli out there? Do you see what he can do? Do you try to salvage something? I know you say they're rebuilding without a rebuilding plan, but map out the rest of the season.
Oh, I get the 10 losses, Jenna. It's a wrap.
Right. Kyle Lauletta at 10 losses.
Yeah, I get the 10 losses. I'm moving off of Eli. Eli doesn't have a streak. We had McAdoo ended that last year, so we don't have that. Because typically, a great player, people take those things in consideration. Forget about the embarrassment, right? The organization is an embarrassment. So how he goes out, that's not my worry anymore. My worry, if I own the New York Giants, I'm running the New York Football Giants, is what is my future and giving my fans just a glimpse that, yes, we do know what we're doing and we do have a future. It's not with Eli Manning.
And Eli's not even playing smart anymore. Yesterday, they're down 11. They have the ball at the 14 with a minute 40 left. Minute 40 left, down 11. You know you need 2 scores, obviously. He throws 2 passes over the middle. And then with a minute left, runs a quarterback sneak, doesn't get it, runs another quarterback sneak. They end up scoring a touchdown with 5 seconds left. Like, that is basic. And people can say that's on Shurmur. It didn't look to me like Shurmur was calling those.
No.
And if he did, Eli been in the league 15 years, check out of it, man. You can't run those plays when you have to get a touchdown and a field goal. It was crazy the end of that game.
New York Giants, now 1-6, firmly in last place of the NFC East. Coming up.
Of the NFL.
The Patriots, it's true, dodged a major bullet. That's next on First Things First. Welcome back to the show. Super Bowl champ Greg Jennings joins us now. Hey, Greg, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you again.
All right, talking about some Patriots, Greg. They got some really good receiving news yesterday after what looked like a brutal injury on Sunday. Sony Michel's MRI revealed no structural damage in his knee. He is considered week to week moving forward. The Patriots probably ecstatic considering the tough challenge they face Monday night in the 2-5 Buffalo Bills.
That ain't right, Jim.
Yes, sarcasm. Also, yes, great news about Sony Michel. Greg, how badly do the Pats need him to have success on offense?
They need him a lot. They need him because when you look at what they're trying to get done, even last year, dating back, they only want Tom to really throw the ball about 35 times. They want to run the ball about 30 times a game. And that's been their key to success. That's been their remedy. You look at last year, they threw Tom Brady's 40-yard pass attempts. He only had 4. Mm-hmm. He only had 4. And 2 of those were losses. In the postseason, he had 2.
One of those
were losses.
Yeah.
And so when I look at this year, he already has 2 games that he's thrown at least 40 attempts. But when they rush the ball for at least 100 yards or close to, they win the ball game. And Sony Michel is a huge part of that. His ability to protect when he is back, when Tom Brady does drop back to throw, his ability to catch out of the backfield, which they really don't even need him to do because of James White and how much of a threat he is to catching the ball out of the backfield. But he has been a great, solid, consistent running back out of the backfield, giving them that running game.
Well, and listen, I think the Pats can find ways to win week to week. You mentioned they play Buffalo, but almost any given week they can probably figure out a game plan to give themselves an edge. But for the Patriots, what's it always about? Making a Super Bowl. Who are they going to have to go through to make a Super Bowl in the AFC? Kansas City, we would assume. The Chargers, maybe. Maybe the Steelers, depending on how the second half of their season goes. All of those teams can really punish the Patriots' defense. They can put points up on the Patriots. So how do you prevent that? Time of possession. What did they do against the Chiefs? 37 carries, 178, 36 minutes time of possession. Sony Michel is the biggest part of that. So he's the only guy. James White has been an excellent player for them. But he is not a guy, see, they're going to hand the ball to 20 times, much less 25 or 30 times, right?
No, like, no. They have shown that history.
They'll throw it to him 10 times.
That they don't believe in him as a runner. And James, he's not undersized, but he doesn't have the type of girth that you would want in your running back. James has been a role running back since ninth grade. We had him at St. Thomas Aquinas. Him and Giovanni Bernard, both ninth graders, started on the varsity for the powerhouse. St. Thomas has 15 guys playing in the NFL. He ended up going to Wisconsin, was a role player there. Since he's been with the Pats, he's been a role player there. The reason why Sony Michel is so valuable because this offseason, Belichick decided that he's the most important part of this offense absent of Tom Brady. That's the reason why they drafted him out of Georgia. He was a role player at Georgia because they had Nick Chubb. But they believed that his running ability between the tackles, his ability to be able to break tackles, that's the way they wanted to play. That's how they get off of Cooks and let Cooks go to the Rams. When Gronk was holding out, didn't know if he was going to play, Sony Michel is going to be the answer. He makes Tom Brady better. He makes their offensive line better because Marcus Cannon's out at right tackle. When you put a backup in there, Sony Michel makes that right tackle better because he's going to allow him to go forward with that running attack. He allows Edelman to be better. He allows Gronk to be better. So for me, outside of Brady, he's the most important part of their offense because you can't predict what he's going to do when he's on the field. James White, you can predict. 80% of the time, 90% of the time, if James White's on the field, they're going to throw the football. So Sony Michel gives them that versatility, gives them that changeup, and gives them the ability for Belichick. He wants to play physical football, not finesse football.
And the only games this year their offense has been elite are the three games Sony Michel's been awesome. The Miami game, 25 for 112, they score 38 on offense. Indy game, 18 for 98, they score 38 on offense. KC game, 24 for 106, they score 40. I know they scored 38 this weekend, but 14 were on special teams. Like this weekend, Sony Michel got hurt, and that offense looked like it did week one when they didn't have him against Houston, where the offense was okay. The next 2 weeks, Jacksonville, Detroit, when Sony Michel wasn't a major part of the game plan. They lost those games, and the offense was muted to a degree. He has been the key to it. Now, I think they'll be fine in the short term without him, but to beat the teams they need to beat, there's a reason they spent a first-round pick on a running back for the first time since Lawrence Maroney about a decade ago.
Yeah, and I go back to, again, what they're trying to get done with Tom Brady. They This is why the Patriots are always a step ahead of everyone else. They understand, when do we want to rely on Tom Brady the most? In the postseason. So we don't want to wear him down. We don't want to him to carry a volume that's so high to where we go into the playoffs and he's 41 years old and he's thrown 40-plus
Or more importantly, he's been beat up.
Or he's dropping back so much and he's taking the extra hits on his body. They understand all of that. So what do? We draft a running back. We hand the ball off. He provides us opportunities to sustain drive and to allow Tom Brady, who you said is the number one piece to that puzzle, the opportunity to continue to pick you apart as a defense.
Great news for the Patriots who now know that.
I thought he was seriously injured coming off the field. If I was doing the game like CeCe, I'd have missed diagnose that injury.
Yeah, you're not a doctor.
Sony Michel, week to week. Gotta take a break. Greg, stick around. Coming up, how much will Amari Cooper help Dak Prescott in the Cowboys offense? Next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First with Greg Jennings. And how about them Cowboys? Jerry Jones wanted a receiver for Dak Prescott, and Jerry Jones got a wide receiver for Dak Prescott. The Cowboys trading a first-round pick to acquire Amari Cooper from the Oakland Raiders. Now, Cooper, who made the Pro Bowl his first two seasons in the NFL, has struggled in a year and a half since, but he could instantly become the number one option in a limited Dallas receiver group. CeCe, what impact will Cooper have on this Cowboys offense?
He definitely makes them better. All right, they got one wide receiver now on the roster that's capable of being the number one wide receiver. So you got 65, 70 plays in offensive games, 70 if you're going well. About 10 or 12 of those plays, you want to build design to your number one guy to be able to dictate to him. We're going to force the defense to be able to cover him. We're going to force the ball to him in either some situation. He's either going to get the football or he's going to dictate coverage that we're going to allow someone else to be open. Now they have that with Amari Cooper. Why is Amari Cooper a friendly wide receiver? Because you can get him the ball at all three levels without straining on your quarterback. He has great game speed as far as being a deep threat. He can come off the line of scrimmage, either bump and run, and be able to get into the deep quadrant of the field. He's a great route runner, intermediate. You could see that. Since he came into the league very, very mature as a route runner, I would say he's a little bit bigger version, not because Greg is on the show. He's a little bigger version of Greg Jennings and the way Greg played football. And his personality is a lot like Greg. So I just feel like quick screens, you can get him the ball, you can run him on reverses. There's only a few receivers that you can use them at all three levels. His football IQ, very, very high. He's a low-maintenance, non-diva wide receiver. He fits into the Cowboys, and I just believe in my working with him as a young player, he grew up as a Cowboys fan. So I believe he's a good fit, even though people might want to say that the price that they paid for him, how else you going to get a number one guy? They just don't fall out of trees and everything. So I believe he's a great addition to the Dallas Cowboys. I'm happy for him that he gets out of Oakland because the last 2 years haven't been good football years for him.
This is interesting for me. You compared him to me. I look, the one thing I would say about Amari Cooper that I did not do, I did not drop the ball as many times as Amari Cooper.
Yeah, but he just got the drops. He never had that at any other part in his career.
He had 18 drops in 2015. He still made the Pro Bowl. Then he handled that. He had 4 drops the following year in 16. Last year he had 10. This year is not even over yet. So when I look at Amari Cooper and the Dallas Cowboys, does he make them better? Yes. But how much better? It's to be seen. Because when my eyes look at what I'm seeing, can he be productive? Of course. But then also, can he just fall off the face? Yes. Now, partly because of quarterback play. Derek Carr hasn't been what we all hoped and wished that we thought he was going to be.
Neither is Dak Prescott.
My point exactly where I was going. But Dak Prescott as well has not been what we thought he was going to accelerate to be coming off that rookie season. Again, is he a number one? Yes. Can he help them and make them better? Yes. But we all have to see it. We got to see it because it hasn't been proven, even with the poor quarterback play that he's had the last couple years.
Let's set the price tag aside for a second. His salary aside, the draft pick compensation aside, let's just talk about the player for a moment. This is the part that I don't understand, even though I have been a Derek Carr skeptic before it was cool to be a Derek Carr skeptic. 9 games since the beginning of last year, he has 2 or fewer catches, 20 or fewer yards. That can't just be quarterback play. And it's not injury. And I know from talking to Chris, it's not work ethic. It's not a guy who all of a sudden started going out partying all the time and stopped preparing for football. It doesn't. You know how much it bothers me, Jenna, when things don't make sense.
Yes.
This is one that doesn't make sense to me. A guy who had the pedigree he had, even if he wasn't a 5-star coming out of high school, goes to Alabama, sets records at Alabama, goes top 5 in the draft, and immediately you went through all the list of wide receivers who've been drafted high and not worked out. He's a guy who immediately did work out, mm-hmm. first year and second year. And then these last year and a half, he's just totally fallen off. That's the part that I don't get. And it's been with 2 coaching staffs in Oakland, 2 systems in Oakland, the same quarterback, obviously. But that's the part of this that Amari's got to prove when he gets to Dallas. Price tag aside. Now, I think they paid over sticker, but that's a separate discussion. The question is why he went from Pro Bowl caliber player to a guy who in half the games he plays is a non-factor.
Is there something to, now that he's in Dallas, he will be the main focus and much of that offense will go through him and maybe more reps gets him back into the swing of things, whereas in Oakland it was a little messy on offense?
This is the thing. We've seen there's no player on Oakland that has a stellar career outside of Khalil Mack. If you look at the last 4 years, when you're on losing football teams, it's hard to have good numbers. Good football players get turned into mediocre, bad football players on bad football teams. We don't talk about them, and they go off into the abyss. That's what happens on teams. It's not as if the Cincinnati Bengals never had good players. They couldn't cultivate those players. So whatever happened in Oakland was called a lack of developing the player. In his first 2 years in pro football, he was a Pro Bowl player already. Did they develop that player? No, we haven't seen that. So the Oakland Raiders, who have they developed? And the one player who did develop, Khalil Mack, they decided to trade him. So it's not as if the Oakland Raiders are some damn think tank for football and they're going out there just enhancing players and making them better. We see a lot of good players go to Oakland and end up coming out of Oakland not as good. So it's a new start for him. Let's see what he can do with that quarterback. But it's more important to the quarterback, because you can't evaluate your quarterback unless you have a number one receiver. At least they do have one of those. You know, you can say you don't like the drops and everything. It's called player development. He's still a very young player at 24, because this is what I'm telling you. K'Neil Harris out of Arizona State, A.J. Brown out of Ole Miss, Marquise Brown out of Oklahoma, Anthony Johnson out of Buffalo. I'll take Amari Cooper over all those guys, because those guys, those are going to be the first round picks. I'll take Amari Cooper over all those guys. So if Dallas could, if they could just throw this season away, they wait on next year's draft and draft one of those kids, I'm putting my money on Amari Cooper, because I know the kid, I know the talent level, and he's already achieved a lot.
Absolutely.
In pro football.
On this level. And I agree with that. I take him over the potential draft picks that they could get.
Because that's your choices.
Those are your options. But for me, you mentioned Dak Prescott. It gives him a chance to evaluate who and what he is. I think that's who this is going – the focus is going to turn on him. Because now Jerry Jones and staff, we're giving you a number one.
Guess what's getting ready to happen to Amari Cooper? He's getting ready to play football like he did at Alabama. It's going to be 9 guys on the field. All right? Oakland, they ain't have to stop the run. They ain't had no running attack.
He's going to be single covered a lot.
Oh, single cover. Absolutely. Just like Alabama. And he was the best player on Alabama's team. But you had to stop them from running. He just helped Dak. He just helped the offensive line. And he just helped Zeke get a whole lot better. Because that one-on-one outside, he will thrive in that.
The worst-case scenario for Dallas is not that Amari Cooper doesn't regain his first and second-year form. The worst scenario for Dallas is that he does. Dak still looks like we've seen him this past year and a half, and they're like, oh, we need to draft a quarterback. Oh, wait, we don't have first-rounder anymore. That's the worst situation for Dallas. Is that it's not that Amari doesn't work out. It's that he does work out, but Dak still has issues, and now they have less resources to go replace the most important spot on the field.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.